you don't really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have.
Welcome to Mission 66, your daily journey through God's Word, powered by Bible teacher Dr. Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. Today, we're in 1 Samuel, a book that emphasizes the importance of obedience, faith, and trusting God's plan over human ambition. Download your free study guide at mission66.org to follow along. Now, here's Esther Sisulu and our teacher, John Matthews.
Our look through the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel continues today on Mission 66. And through our journey, we've seen the heart of King Saul getting darker and darker toward David, because God had rejected Saul and chose David as king. And in his murderous jealousy, King Saul began chasing David instead of tending to the affairs of the state. Well, today, John Matthews will bring us chapters 21 and 22 with the theme, David on the Run.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to this latest episode of Mission 66. So good to be with you all wherever you join us from today. And, you know, in recent episodes, we've seen King Saul become increasingly consumed with rage against David, who in reality was one of his most capable and loyal supporters. For his part, even though Saul's behaviour and attitude towards him could at very best be described as unpredictable and putting his life quite literally in danger, well, David never developed an intention to avenge himself against Saul. But after being informed by Saul's son Jonathan that he was truly in danger of his life, well, David realises that he's got to flee. And so we pick up the chase here now in 1 Samuel chapter 21, reading from verse 1. Then David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came to meet David trembling and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I have charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever is here.'" Now, David here not telling Ahimelech the truth, maybe because he didn't know whether or not Ahimelech could be trusted, or, and this is perhaps more likely the case, he figures out that the less Ahimelech knows about what he's doing, the better. And this is the first time that we see Ahimelech mentioned in the Bible. And in verse 4, it says that he, the priest, Ahimelech, answers David saying, "Look, I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women." And David answered the priest, "Truly, women have been kept from us, as always when I go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy, even when it is an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy?" So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before the Lord to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. Now, in the New Testament, we see Jesus actually referring to this incident as he answers his critics. They thought the holy bread could never be eaten because it was too holy, and that the Sabbath could never be broken according to their own definition of what could and couldn't be done. But Jesus says to them, the Pharisees, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath," and that it was all right for the priest to give David holy bread to sustain his life. And he mentions this very story. And then in verse 7, it says, "A certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg, the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. So here enters what I suppose you could call the villain in this part of the story, Doeg, the Edomite, who's working for Saul. Then David said to Ahimelech, "Then have you not here a spear or a sword at hand? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." And the priest replied, "The sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you struck down in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there is none but that here." And David said, "There is none like that. Give it to me." And David rose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said to him, "Is not this David, the king of the land? Did they not sing to one another of him in dances that Saul has struck down his thousands, but David his 10,000s? And David took these words to heart and was much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behaviour before them and pretended to be insane in their hands, and made marks on the doors of the gate and let his spittle run down his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man is mad. Why then have you brought him to me? Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" So David clearly had a little bit of the ability of an actor running in him, didn't he? Here he is, sort of playing the part of a madman in order to keep Achish from suspecting him of being a spy. And so now we move into chapter 22, and it continues the story of David on the run, when it says that David departed from there and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him, and he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. I think it's really interesting, isn't it, that there's something about the heart of David, a man after God's own heart, who draws here, what does it say in verse 2? Those who are in distress, those who are in debt, those who are in bitter in soul and anxious. He draws those people to him. Isn't that interesting? And what we're seeing is David's popularity begins to show itself again. And, you know, quite quickly, it seems almost out of nowhere, he's got these gathering around him, a gathering of loyalists. And verse 3 says, "And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, 'Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me.' And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, 'Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah.' So David departed, and he went into the forest of Hereth." Now, interesting this again, because Moab was historically unfriendly toward Israel. But remember, David was a descendant of Ruth, a Moabite, so may still have had ties to Moab at this point. Look, in any case, David considered them to be more trustworthy at this point than the Israelites who were still following Saul. And they were pretty willing, well, very willing to protect David's family. But the prophet Gad here, whose name we'll come to know more of, he warns David to go back to Judah. And now we reach verse 6, and here Saul taking up the chase again. "Now Saul heard that David was discovered and the men who were with him. Saul was sitting at Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height with his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. And Saul said to his servants who stood about him, Hear now, people of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me? No one discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait, as at this day. And here's King Saul feeling pretty much sorry for himself. I think it's probably the best way to describe it. He's driven by jealousy. He's murderously trying to hunt David down, but here he is, pitying himself. But verse 9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servants of Saul, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent to summon Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were at Nob. And all of them came to the king. And Saul said, Hear now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, Here I am, my lord. And Saul said to him, Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword, and inquired of God for him, so that he has risen against me to lie in wait, as at this day? Now Saul doesn't have his facts straight here, because David's not chasing Saul. It's completely the other way around. But this is Ahimelech's reply when he answers the king. He says, And who among all your servants is so faithful as David, who is the king's son-in-law and captain over your bodyguard and honoured in your house? Is today the first time that I have inquired of God for him? No, let not the king impute anything to his servant or to all the house of my father, for your servant has known nothing of all of this, much or little. And the king replied, You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house. And the king said to the guard who stood about him, Turn, kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David. And they knew that he fled, and did not disclose it to me. But the servants of the king would not put out their hand to strike the priests of the Lord. Then the king said to Doeg, You turn and strike the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priests. And he killed on that day 85 people who wore the linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priests, he put to the sword, both man and women, child and infant, ox, donkey and sheep he put to the sword. So here's Doeg the Edomite, not afraid, it seems, to slay 85 priests, not to mention wiping out the people of this place called Nob, young and old. Verse 20 says, But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me. Do not be afraid. For he who seeks my life seeks your life. With me, you shall be in safe keeping. So David is truly here on the run, but God has plans for David. He'll still go on to become king of all Israel. But first, what is he doing? Well, he's going through the valley of despair, isn't he? And here David will learn how to handle life's twists and turns, difficult, impossible, though it would have seemed. at times, but he's learning to rely upon God and God alone. You know, sometimes when God's got a job for us to do or a new chapter in our lives to encounter, he brings us through the valley to prepare us for what lies ahead and to teach us reliance upon him, to teach us and draw us more closely to him. You remember that some of David's Psalms were written right here when he's on the run, chased by the hounds of Saul.
You're listening to Mission 66, and we're here with our teacher, John Matthews, who's going to take the next couple of minutes to answer questions that have arisen as a result of what we've read. And you're with me, Esther, as well, and I'm here to ask the questions. And John, I'd like us to start off with this one. Now, what do you think about Doeg the Edomite, who was in the company of the priests? Wasn't he a foreigner? Why was he amongst them?
Yeah, it's a good spot, Esther, because, you know, the Edomites, descendants of Esau, were not known for their friendship with Jacob's descendants. We could even ask, you know, what was he doing in the service of Saul in the first place? Because Saul was the king of Israel. Well, look, perhaps Doeg was there for some special reason. We don't know, but the chapter says that he was performing his duties before the Lord, and we don't know anything beyond that.
Okay, so why doesn't God then intervene and help David as he's being pursued by King Saul and prevent all of this bloodshed?
Well, actually, Esther, I think he does intervene in that he allows Saul to pursue his murderous intentions to a point, but he never allows him to get what he wants. You know, indeed, actually, we will see that God had been a guiding light in David's life throughout, even when perhaps especially when he was facing the most difficult situations. You know, sometimes God allows the toughest, at times, most inexplicable things to happen in our lives.
Now, John, I'm asking these types of questions because, you know, there may be somebody listening who thinks or who's perhaps thought to themselves, well, God continues to allow these bad things to happen. I've seen it in my own life. In this particular case, it seems that God is standing by and he's allowing these 85 faithful priests to be killed. And I do want to say that seems is the operative word here, right?
Yeah, and you know, Esther, how many times have we spoken about this, you know, really important question of why God allows evil of any kind? You know, why does God allow suffering? It's something that we come across in the Bible, and we've spoken about it before. And you know, sometimes with the giving of free will, God also allows evil things to happen. And God doesn't promise to protect good people from anything, even death. But he does promise, Esther, and I don't know whether you are listening to Mission 66 and things are really tough right now. If they are, our hearts and our prayers are certainly with you and go out to you. God promises, Esther, never to leave or forsake us and to be right there with us in the midst of any fire that life throws our way. And he also promises that ultimately evil will come to an end and be no more. He's right there in the moment when we face our last breath on this earth, closer than we could ever imagine. He's right there. And God, you know, he gives this free will, right? And so he allows people absolute free choice to declare which side they're on. And free will means each of us are free to act on that will. And so here you have Doeg acting on the free will he's given. And what does he do? He carries out a terrible massacre of priests. But be sure, God will hold Doeg accountable for what he does here. And, you know, not to labour the point, but he is on the record as being a mass murderer of God's priests. And that means there is a big cost to pay.
You know, just thinking in lines of accountability, I think that the opposite is true as well, right? That those that remain faithful to God, they'll also be rewarded.
Absolutely. And that quote comes to mind, that lovely quote about the American missionary who was martyred whilst taking the gospel to a South American tribe, Jim Elliot, when he said, "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." And you think of the many people who've been martyred for their faith in Jesus Christ throughout the centuries. Well, imagine the joy unspeakable that they feel right now, enjoying the eternal reward for their faithfulness, but better than that, enjoying being in the company, in the light and the love of God himself. And they'll be enjoying that heaven for an endless future, for eternity. Perhaps sometimes, well, look, not perhaps, definitely, we need to think in terms of eternity rather than just the few years that we have here on this planet, because they are few and our lives are but a drop in the ocean compared to that span of eternal life.
Amen. Ah, oh, what a wonderful shift in perspective. Now, you know, Saul in this account, John, he didn't seem to have any misgivings or any reservations, in fact, about ordering his own priest to be killed. That's quite alarming.
Yeah, it is alarming, isn't it? And just how hard his heart has become, to the point where he is paranoid, thinks everybody is against him. And Doeg's report seems to affirm this. And yet his willingness to wipe out the city of priests showed how far he'd strayed from God, Saul. And, this is without doubt a downward spiral.
We're really seeing it in effect here. Okay, John, let's take a look at this, because I found this absolutely interesting. And that is why the Philistines accept David into their camp. And I mean, these people, they know that he's one of those who's responsible for killing so many of the Philistines, and yet they accept him.
Yeah, it's an interesting twist in the story, Esther. And at first, the king, Achish, well, he may have been happy to have him, but they know David's reputation and they know that he's now an enemy of Saul. So maybe he had seemed to them like a trustworthy defector. What they didn't know, of course, was that David's already been anointed as the next king of Israel. But clearly this is uneasy territory for David, because he's in this situation and there's an uncertainty about it, because that uncertainty leads him to have to pretend to be insane. And he does that. He pretends to be insane because he's picked up on the fact that someone there is suspicious of him.
When he went to Nob and he disclosed his situation to the priest and he got that bread and the sword of Goliath, we see that he knew that Doeg, the Edomite, was there. And then David confesses to Ahimelech's son that he was the cause of all of those priests' death. Okay, what was this true?
You know, when I read that, I read it as though David saying, look, it's because of me that this has happened. So David is not slow to try and take responsibility. And I think there's something really endearing about that. And I suppose the answer to the question is in a way it's true, because he doesn't know Doeg or what he might tell. And perhaps he should have been more guarded in the way that he dealt with Ahimelech, taking him aside maybe out of Doeg's hearing. But then he wasn't to know anyway, you know, what Doeg's response might be. I think we just have to be very careful about the words that we speak, because we have no idea how those words will be used. You know, the account of Doeg, the Edomite here, it really is a teacher. It's teaching me to watch my words, because you never know who's listening. And what's interesting about David is that when he realizes that he had caused people to die because of what he had said, I mean, that was the instrument or the instigator of what followed, revealing those secrets to Doeg the Edomite, he does take responsibility for it. and he understands and recognizes it instantly. And so in a sense, he takes responsibility and he learns his lesson. Again, the Bible book of Proverbs, which we'll get to in Mission 66, has a verse that says this: death and life are in the power of the tongue. May we be those who bring the light and the life and the encouragement of Jesus into our conversations, and may they flow through our words and bring life through the power of the tongue, not death.
Right. Well, you know, let's quickly have a look at Saul once again, because you mentioned that he surrounded himself with individuals of poor character, you know. But in chapter 22, it also says that David had a following amongst those who were in distress, who were in debt, or who were discontented. Now, I wonder, wouldn't these people be considered the same types of people that Saul surrounded himself with?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer definitively, but what we do see from what we've just read is that David's people gather towards him at the cave of Adullam, and they are those who've been marginalized by the unfairness of life. And there's clearly something about David that they feel drawn to, and we've just read about that.
Well, John, these passages were quite interesting to unpack, and thank you so much for just helping us through this understanding. So how about we move along now to the summary of these two chapters?
Yeah, let's do that, Esther. So today the theme was David on the run, and we see him encountering problems and trials, and doubtless these are part of God's plan to develop David's character, to develop him into somebody who's ready to be the king of Israel. And, you know, in the same way, God, he uses our circumstances. If we commit them to him and commit our lives and our hearts to him, he uses then our circumstances, tough though they may be, to make us more like his son, Jesus. So God brings David through the valley into the kingdom, and he'll do exactly the same for us, because this is a God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever.
As always, friend, I want to thank you for joining us here on Mission 66. There are always so many amazing gems to glean from the Word of God, and I hope that you will take those with you. And we look forward to being with you next time as we continue to look into the book of 1 Samuel. So until then, from myself and John, God bless you. This is Mission 66.
Has God used today's program in your life? Then you'll want to receive the free study guide that's waiting for you on our website. You can get it right away by downloading it at mission66.org. At mission66.org, you can also leave a comment or make a donation to help this listener-supported ministry. When you give, you're helping listeners experience solid Bible teaching in many languages in some of the most spiritually resistant places in the world. Thank you for helping at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio.